Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of Dr. Brass Talks. I am your host for today, Peter Wickham, in my semi-regular Tuesday spot. Good to be with you. Special thanks to the man, Cassie, for taking you through the course of this morning. It is now my responsibility to sit with you until 1 p.m. In the distinguished company of Mr. John Stout. And we're here until 1 p.m. The program today is truncated. I'm going to make an effort because I have been receiving complaints from people about the length of time I've been staying on the phone with some callers. We had the luxury of few advertisements for the past couple of weeks, and we also had the luxury of a long program. Today things are different because normally the month of January is a relatively light one advertisements wise. However, that changes in February, so I'm going to try to pick up the pace. So if you notice that I am rather less long with you than I would normally be, please understand the situation. So I'm happy to be here. Normally I will give you a 10-minute prefatory remark. Today it will be a 5-minute prefatory remark, and I will try to keep it to that. Of course, my mind is firmly fixed on the politics of the globe, including the coronavirus, the politics of the United States of America and their desire to choose a presidential candidate, and of course the politics of the European Union, which has just started the initial talks regarding the future shape of the relationship with the United Kingdom, even as their politics moves on. So as far as the American situation is concerned, I continue to be fascinated by their primary process. I think everyone knows I'm a big fan of the extent to which the American system democratizes the electoral process and gives us the opportunity, or gives them the opportunity, to select among candidates within parties and then to select candidates outside of parties. So you have elections on so many different levels. So we're now looking at the race for the presidential nomination in the Democratic Party. There's none in the Republican Party, as is the custom. The president has given the opportunity to try again. And there has been a bit of a shakeup in terms of the way that things have been looking. And I mentioned last week that coming out of the Iowa caucus, it appeared as though Biden had fallen. And certainly, as the results have been declared, you had a tie between Buttigieg, as the apparent front runner in terms of delegates, and then Bernie Sanders, who was a majority winner of the popular vote, but certainly didn't win as many candidates as Buttigieg would have won. Certainly Sanders is not a surprise. Buttigieg is a surprise. And the comments are that he is going from being adorable to electable. So the conversation has very much shifted. A centrist character. And certainly that is an interesting contrast to Bernie. So the lefties are in a struggle between Bernie Sanders and one other lady, and the centrists essentially now appear to have a front runner in the shape of Pete Buttigieg. The question, of course, is whether or not he is electable. He needs to appeal to black people who seemed to have no interest in him up to this point. He was polling very badly among blacks, while Biden was polling very well among blacks. And I think that we all know the reason for that. But it's been an interesting race so far, and certainly today's caucus, which would be, I believe it's in New Hampshire caucus, is going to essentially send a signal regarding where we are likely to see that race going. As it goes into the next big event, will of course be Super Tuesday, when one can say you separate the sheep from the goats. But in this regard, I think that the clear front runners are emerging. This morning I was hearing that the other lady known by the name of Amy, I am unable to pronounce her last name, and I have to admit that. She has also been polling very well and has been producing a huge surprise regarding her performance, or her likely performance, in this primary coming up. So the race seems to be fairly open at this stage. My expectation is that there will be considerable consolidation along the way. Of course, my desire for a female candidate is still very real, but I have to admit that I am less excited by the offering of females this time around than I was last time around. And certainly, there was a female that excited me with Jamaican roots, ironically, but she didn't make it past the primary stage because, as we know, this whole process is expensive. But of course, I hope, or should I say of course, but I hope that maybe there's some vice presidential options lingering in there. Bringing it to the local scene, last week I mentioned a concern about traffic management. And certainly as this morning, the British Prime Minister announced, one could say, a 20-year initiative to plan transportation in the north of the United Kingdom that would have been delivered. It starts now and it should be delivered by 2040 in its completed reality. And I wonder whether we should not be having a similar conversation in Barbados about South Coast and West Coast transportation and the projections that we are making going forward. And I made a point last week about hotel developments, and I said that I think that the time is now for us to start a conversation about where we are going to take public transportation in Barbados over the next 10 years. It cannot be business as usual. And even as government is fixed on the economic realities, which are relatively more short-term, about delivering those hotel projects, I believe we have to have a medium to long-term conversation about what will the public transport infrastructure look like? Will it continue to be the mess that it currently is? Or will we plan some type of rapid movement, some kind of mass transit facility that can especially help us on the South Coast and on the West Coast as we go forward? So that's something to think about. Sadly, these programs are inundated by conversations about current issues, but we never speak futuristically. And I'm hoping that I can plant a seed in someone's head and we can start to have that kind of a futuristic discussion. So, down to brass tacks, and someone is reminding me that the lady's name is Amy Klobuchar. Amy Klobuchar. And I want to thank you, WhatsApper, for I want to thank you for giving me the correct pronunciation to Amy Klobuchar, because she seems to be one that is shining brightly at this stage. I'm also told that I announced Pete Buttigieg's name incorrectly. It is Buttigieg. We can call him Mayor Pete to make life easy, and that way we offend no one. So down to brass tacks, good morning and welcome to the first caller.
Good morning, Peter.
Hey, good morning.
Hi, this is Glenn.
Hey, good morning, Glenn. How are you doing?
Yeah. Last week, I threatened to have some political talk with you today, so here I am to stay in that vein.
Okay.
But you have, I'm going to fall in line with your opening remarks when you deal with some international politics, although I'd hope to talk to some local politics, which I'd probably talk about when you talk about the transport sector.
Okay.
One more correction. Today is a primary in New Hampshire, not a caucus. Yeah, the caucus.
Oh, sorry, I said caucus?
Yeah.
I thought it said primary. Yeah.
You know the difference, the primary.
Yeah. Understood. I thought it said primary. I didn't realize it said caucus.
But I was fascinated by your overall remarks when you talk about the primary system of the American system democratizes the whole electoral process. But then you hinted at what I was going to come to, but you know, I don't see how money determines the outcome of American politics, largely.
Money.
I don't see if money is one of the major, or the major determinant factor it could be truly democratic, because money, I mean, opens for those persons who have the most money or have access to the most money and the most support. And in that regard, I heard something on, CNN, this morning, the BBC, either radio or TV, that with the spending on the mayor is Bloomberg. He's the last.
Yeah, he's right. His spender.
His stocks have skyrocketed apparently to among the black community because of the amount of the millions of dollars he's able to pump into these communities through advertising, and therefore it skews and distorts the whole process as far as I'm concerned, and it doesn't necessarily reflect. It might affect the best interest because it's a stimulus and response. You advertise to get a certain response.
Yeah.
And the person who has the most money with a particular could get the particular response that it needs if it's marketed properly.
You know, my only difficulty with that is I've seen, for example, the fundraising campaign of Bernie Sanders, the fundraising campaign of Hillary Clinton even, which she was a kind of a mix. But Bernie's distinction has always been the fact that he raises a lot of money from small contributions. Certainly, in the American system, the argument is that if you can't raise money, it basically means that you're not a good candidate. Because if no one is willing to support you financially, then they're probably not going to support you politically. It's, to me, an interesting argument where they have not concerned themselves a whole lot with how much money a person can raise, because their argument is that raising money is a reflection of public support. Well, what they do are important. They want you to be transparent about how you spend it, and I think that that is a hallmark of their system.
But the source of the money is also important. If like Bernie Sanders has been stressing for the last several, if you are raising lots of money, right, from the business sector, from the multi corporations, the banks, the pharmaceutical companies, etc., and you know in the American system where lobbying is to me the greatest source of corruption in politics in the world, but they've legalized it. But lobbying, the more money you have, the greater access you have to lobbying, and the winner will have to have some obligation to the supporters, and that therefore distorts and changes sometimes to the better, sometimes the worse, the whole process of your agenda and the winner's agenda by which you have voted for, probably by the public. And to me, democracy therefore is defeated that process.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But I also feel that we also in Barbados have to start looking at funding of elections.
You better believe it.
Funding of elections. I think the same thing happens in Barbados too. Funding the money you have for advertising and supporting and t-shirts and music and extravaganza, all that helps to generate your support. And so it means the person.
I disagree, though.
You disagree?
I disagree. I have not seen any evidence in terms of my own work that spending excessive amounts of money on t-shirts and banners and that type of thing really makes a difference in support. Largely because the people who will wear your t-shirt are usually not votes that you need to covet.
Yeah, but you said that what it does is boost your support.
Among people who will vote for you anyhow.
And you know the bandwagon effect. People will see it and...
Glenn has a long conversation that we're going to have, but we can't have it today, but I can tell you that this is a view that I have. I mean, I have this conversation in the course of election campaigns with my clients all the time, that I've never been a supporter of the t-shirt movement. I don't like it. I don't like paraphernalia. And my main thing is that it costs so much money. You know, paraphernalia costs millions and millions of dollars, and I am not convinced it makes any difference. I look at the last election in Antigua. Antigua is a special case for paraphernalia. The place was littered with paraphernalia, largely from the Antigua Barbuda Labor Party. The testing that I was doing regarding their likely performance before the election, and then the reality of what happened in the election suggested that not a whole lot changed. And the problem is that the people who were not going to vote for them were not persuaded by the banners and whatnot. The people that they need to appeal to are the slightly softer voters. And a lot of those people are never going to wear a t-shirt. They're not impressed by that kind of spending. And I mean, maybe a social media buzz might help a bit, but I am not convinced. I mean, as a media person, you may have different views, but I don't see it.
But would you say the last election that people were impressed or impacted turned on by t-shirts, music, the glitz, the glamour, the paraphernalia, whatnot?
I think the organization of the Barbados Labour Party's platform helped. And t-shirts were part of that, but I think it went beyond t-shirts. I think it had to do with the platform organization, the fact that the BLP brought a manifesto statement and then a mini manifesto, and they had a launch. I would say organization definitely helped in terms of demonstrating that they were ready. But I think the biggest factor in the last election was the performance of the Democratic Labor Party. And the Democratic Labor Party let go some good money too, but unfortunately it didn't seem to make a difference.
All right, we don't have time for that.
The question in Barbados is always whether you should spend money on a platform. Or alternatively, you should put money in people's hands.
Right. Spending the constituency.
And it seems as though the latter formulation worked in this time. Which would lead me back to the view that the substantive factor really is your performance over that period of time, the organization of your platform, and the comparative leadership, I would say, in both instances, and less so matters of how much money you push in people's hand election day, or how much money you spend buying t-shirts for an election weekend.
But I
agree with you, it needs to be monitored in Barbados.
Under some kind of control.
It's hard to, but I think we need to bring it under some control. And we have two models. You know, I've written a lot about it in my previous life as an academic, where you have the American model, which is really about monitoring the sources of your donation and transparency regarding how much you're spending. And then the British model that essentially limits advertising. Actually, it prohibits advertising.
One last comment on that score is I feel that we're moving to the point now where we have to require political parties to be registered as an entity. Mm-hmm. I mean, our friend Anti-Merck used to talk about that all the time. Now, at first, I didn't quite get it, but I think that right now, in the same way that charities and NGOs have to be registered, mm-hmm. I think that we should register our parties. They have to account for their activities and their finances and where the money goes and what. I think that's mm-hmm. one way of dealing with the same thing as financing or what. I think it's all part of the financing process.
Okay.
But really, transport, I agree with you that we have to start thinking futuristically about transport and how the modes of transport, where it goes, because the transport is just not just moving people, it lends towards development. And what you're talking about is it has to do not just with the growth of Barbados, which hotel projects deal with, but the development of society. In the center, development, as you would know, also encompasses the quality of life, mm-hmm. better health, education, same kind of infrastructure, but it's a broader, deeper, meaningful, more enduring process than just growth, which is statistical in nature, growth, domestic, property, or whatnot. And I think that that is a discussion I think that we have to do in the same way that Tom Miles was able to transform Barbados physically with that ABC Highway. Mm-hmm. In the same way that the Bridgestone Harbour itself had to transform Barbados in 67 there on, those kind of futuristic developmental growth issues have to be focused on in a different way. Again, say that we ain't going in a different era, a different outlook without the green economy and whatnot. But we have to start thinking like that and thinking hard about it. I would support you on that.
All right. We're going to go take a message and then we're going to come back and move to some more calls. Good morning. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks. I got an interesting WhatsApp here. Peter, the pronunciation is Buttigieg. Anyhow, the American political system is by no means democratic. I know you're familiar with the Electoral College. Can that be considered democratic? Hillary Clinton won the popular vote but lost in the Electoral College, which was created to appease slave states. I really don't think anyone can draw any conclusion from what has happened so far in the electoral process in the U.S. There was a caucus in a small state that is not representative of the makeup of the American population, as is 95% white. You know, I think that the black and white in your comment is not black and white racially, but the black and white. And certainly do not get the impression that I am suggesting to you that the American system is democratic and the Barbados system is not. I'm talking about aspects of democracy that I like. So yes, I have issues with the Electoral College, and I do believe that the moment that we move to a situation in the United States where the Congress is sufficiently powerful in both houses, and there's sufficient support at the level of the individual state, so they will have a constitutional change that will move towards a popular vote. The problem, however, is that there has never been that reality, and they have essentially worked with what they have. But having said all of that, and I agree with you entirely about the Iowa reality, I agree with you about the fact that it is not reflective of the entire population, and it leads public opinion by being the first primary. At the same time, however, you know, I think it's good that they actually do have something akin to a caucus. We have candidates chosen in Barbados. In the last election, we had a candidate chosen for the constituency of St. John, days before an election was called. And there was no caucus, there was no local input. At least they have something called a caucus in Iowa. In other places, they have something called a primary that's even more democratic. There are closed primaries and there are open primaries. Some primaries restrict participation to registered Democrats and registered Republicans. Other primaries do not and say anyone can come and vote in their primary, which gives you a good sense of how people will respond to one candidate versus another. So I think that I understand where you're coming from, but my comments were never really intended to be colored in terms of black and white. I like primaries. I like the fact that the Barbados Labour Party has something akin to a primary in terms of choosing a candidate, and that they can have each individual registering large numbers of supporters for the party, and you can have an active debate between two good candidates. as distinct from what happens in the DLP, where the general counsel meets and chooses candidates through information that's best known to them. And that is the kind of comparison that I'm seeking to bring out. And I should make the point that what the Democratic Labour Party does is no different to what is done in the vast majority of Caribbean islands in terms of candidate selection. It is a private covert process, and it does not benefit from public input in the way that it probably should. Dr. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Brother B. Not
morning,
Brother
sir.
B. Good morning, Brother
B. You're not here. Yeah, if only I were so fortunate. Yeah.
But you'd be fortunate to be mayor, but I know you can't run out there. Listen, Kevin, I only had one thing for you, but this morning, I got to say something about something that I heard just now. During the last election, Peter, I had opportunity to get two shirts.
And two shirts?
Two political shirts.
Okay.
And I accept one. Mm-hmm. And it's still on my wardrobe in the bag the same way. So I heard some person saying this more that it's an influence this and influence that. It's very rubbish as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. They're going to stop with the foolishness that they're coming with on the programs. Man. I can't go along with that foolishness. Mm-hmm. But I come to deal with you now with the American politics, man. I can't listen to that nonsense from Yalta.
Mm-hmm.
Brother Pete, I want to ask you.
So what you do with the two shirts now?
Huh?
What you do with the two shirts?
No, you don't understand me. They said they had...
I know, you see, you have them. Oh, you have opportunities, but you didn't get them.
I said I had opportunity to get
them. Oh, okay, I see. Okay.
And I refused one, and I got one.
All right.
And I never wear the one that I got yet. So it's still there on my wall up in the same bag.
Which color the one you got is? Blue or red?
And you were too malicious, aren't you? It's red.
It's red. All right.
It's red. It is red. I know you want it.
It's good to keep it just in case, you know. You never know.
No, I got it. Then keep it.
I ain't got neither one.
But no, but I never wore none.
Yeah, I was trying to get a yellow one last election, but they didn't take me on.
I'll be a deal with them.
They didn't think that I was serious. They thought I was looking to export.
As you just. Brother Pate, I want to ask you about Bernie Sanders.
Sure.
Do you feel... if Bernie Sanders don't get the full nod, if his supporters is going to support whoever wins?
Mm.
I say no. In my opinion, I say no. I just watched that thing 24. Mm-hmm. To me, Bernie Sanders is the worst.
Can you remember the Bernie or Bus movement?
You could
that was it called, right? Bernie or Bus, to say if it's not Bernie, the Bus. Bus luck, yeah, they voting. I disagree with you, and I'll tell you why. I think that the Bernie Sanders supporters, who were the Bernie or Bus variety.
This time you're speaking about?
I think that they learned an important lesson last time, because I think a lot of them realized that they were responsible for the mess
Trump,
that is Trump.
Being president.
Right, and I am inclined to think that this time around, to start with, Bernie is older. And I think that a lot of people are loyal to him, could have figured that you could as well give him a chance by now. But if he doesn't make it to the end, my feeling is that those supporters will say, look, we got to put somebody in the White House that can carry the journey. I do feel that though they have their preferences. And I believe that Elizabeth Warren would be their preference because she is similarly inclined in the left direction. So I feel that it would be easier for them to convey their support to her than to convey it to somebody like Buttigieg or Biden.
Buttigieg,
yeah. I feel that they would have greater difficulty with his centrist position and Biden's centrist position. And I think for them, they hope that Bernie can make it. And if it doesn't, then they will look for
Elizabeth Warren. I don't want Bernie getting nowhere in this election at all.
Why? He's too old?
For what he did to Hillary last election. Bernie's a scam, in my opinion.
Dying fear.
Wearing fear.
What he do to Hillary?
Again, you hold your supporters not to support Hillary.
He didn't do that. But he was the person who pledged to push her over the mark at the convention. He campaigned for her. I do feel that he did everything in his power to get her elected. The challenge is that his supporters, some of them, would have had their own ideas.
He had canvas for that in the first. I can't take on Bernie, but you know who would like to win that presidency?
Who is
there's
that?
Two people that I got there.
You like Biden?
But by the way, I got Mayor Pete.
Uh-huh.
I got the billionaire. Bloomberg.
Somebody else just wrote me online saying that they like Bloomberg because he's progressive and he got the money to match Trump.
I'm dealing with the money. I'm dealing with some person that can stand up face to face with Trump.
I'm facing him head on.
Head on.
Yeah.
I like Mayor Pete. Mad.
Yeah. Well,
I saw his morning on MSNBC. Mother, that man is something that man can talk.
He can talk, but my concern with him is the extent to which he's conservative.
There's a feeling,
the black vote is a different story. That's really a problem that we black people have. Black people have an issue with homosexuals. And that is something that I think it's a conversation we need to have with ourselves as black people. And I think it goes deeper, but that's not a conversation for today.
Yeah, true.
The issue is a lot of people in the Democratic movement in the U.S. feel that this is the ideal time to put somebody with the kind of left-wing views in the White House because they are likely to come with an avalanche of support from Congress and they can make fundamental change. So if you are a person that believes that their national insurance, the Social Security, needs to be reformed, if you are a person that believes that there needs to be radical changes in terms of health care, the person that will achieve that is not Pete Buttigieg.
Right.
Because he's not the person. The person that is more likely to do that is either Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders. So the concern, I think, is losing the momentum of this time. And I think that this is an ideal time in the eyes of a lot of Democrats to say, look, we're going to move the pendulum far back to the left now because it is just too far right. And if this is your desire, I don't know if Mayor Pete is your guy.
Mayor Pete is my guy, honestly. Yeah. So the American lady, I like her too.
Yeah, Kamala Harris.
Kamala Harris. And the other one, Booker.
No, she was a giant, but I'm hopeful that somebody will smile upon her and make her a vice presidential candidate.
I feel so too.
Which basically means that she can reemerge in 10 years' time, in 8 years' time, as a presidential candidate.
I like her.
It was good chatting with you, and thank you for keeping us on the global scene for a little while. All right, good call. Thanks a lot, Dr. Brastas. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Peter.
Mm-hmm.
First thing, I didn't even know that brother was on the program yesterday. That Rashida Daddy want to extend my sympathy and condolences. Is what it is.
Okay,
but.
I would like to do the same as well. I saw the moderator's chat that it was noted that he passed away. So certainly let me join you in conveying condolences. He certainly was a life well lived, and I would want to let the family know, certainly not let you, my thoughts are with them at this time.
And if someone carry on his work, it would mean he's still alive in the body of someone else, because as my granddad always said, good people don't die. Somebody always carry on the work.
Well, that's a philosophy that I also share. Any calls that he would have made, any contributions that he would have made, the fact that we can recall and remember those contributions means that his spirit continues to live within the environment that we have created. So that's an important point.
All of my comments today are directed at the statesman. I just wonder if sometimes if this man, while reading his prepared documents that's given to him, if he don't pause and think about the people who are suffering at the hands of this government. He talk about the people had to go home. I remember when on the campaign trail, the Barbosa Party, and I want to make it clear, I care about nada, whether D or B. But when they say there's wrong things going on, I will speak out. They are criticized for their struggle having 17 ministers. And the criticisms were just, you don't need 17 ministers. But now all of a sudden, there's 26. I always knew when you are pruning a tree, you start at the top. Mm-hmm. You start at the top. Anytime you go at the roots and you're not putting fertilizer, you are killing that tree. What about the increase in bus fares? Yeah, bus fares had to be increased at some point, but the time it was wrong and bad. What about the $48 on everybody's water bill? If you don't pay it this month, it's added on, so it becomes accumulated debt. What about the suffering people? People who have mortgages to pay and other financial responsibilities. But you are sacrificing those small people and letting those 9 other ministers remain. It can't be fair. And this man don't ever talk about anything. All he is a mouthpiece in the Barbados Authority. That's how I see it. The way he speak, he read from documents that's given to him. He don't talk from the head nor the heart. I want to know too, if he indeed have a heart. I have never, ever, ever heard him in his contributions talk about those people who were sent home. Not once. When he does talk about them, they should have got sent home anyhow. They would have gotten sent home. I can't deal with that. Mm-hmm. I know this time, I don't know about economic. I know that I distress reality. And you cannot be reducing your workforce and making more income. The only way you can do that is by overtaxing people. And that is not a positive step. You are putting added financial responsibility on the people. So when you kill off the people, what can happen? How are you going to build the economy? Mm-hmm. How can you recall growth by sending more people? Now, SBI has started by reducing the amount of ministers that Fandia had. I can understand that. Bring back people like Billy Miller and Johnny Sheltenham. It seems as though people were being rewarded. Everything that was criticized has now been done two and threefold. You know, this was another planet. I have spoken to a number of people. There are people who work at the Ministry of Transport and work for 18, 19, 20, 21 years who were sent home. When the talk came about who was sending home people, it was said three years. Then it went up and up and up and up and up. I think it's about time for everybody to start starting up for the right. As I said before, and I said again, those people who are maybe 18, 19, and 20 years, you were appointed because you did not receive your letter of appointment. It does not mean that you were not appointed. When Wanapu was prime minister, I think it was in 2007, he has said that all people in the government service who have served 4 or more years will automatically be appointed. It went to parliament, the law was passed, it was ratified, letters started to come out. The letters talk when the last government came to office. As far as I know, there was no amendment to the law. So because you did not receive your letters of appointment does not mean that you are not appointed. You qualified. If you owe money and they are constantly sending you a monthly bill, and a month come that you did not get your bill, it doesn't mean that you don't order for the month. And another thing, the unions, what are they good for? What purpose are they really serving? Just to collect people money and then throw it to the wolves? Even that, if we all would get together and put the unions before the law court because you're paying for representation, is it only about increase in salaries and wages, is about job security, job protection. It's about almost everything. Okay. So all this talk. Yeah, you were saying?
No, you finish your point.
Yeah, if you want to respond, you can respond.
No, I'm not going to respond. I just let you make your point in its entirety. Because I wanted to respond, but I want to respond to something else. So,
there are things,
but I didn't want to deny you the opportunity to put your issue on the table in its fullest. Right.
I would let him if he called in today.
All right.
You mentioned those things to him for me.
Okay. Well, I'm sure he's listening, so he will.
Yeah, but he's a coward. He's going to respond. He's going to talk and talk. He's a coward.
Thanks a lot for calling, Mr. P. Appreciate hearing from you. Yeah. I have an interesting exchange on WhatsApp. Gentleman is saying to me about certainly they disagree with me on the Hillary thing, and they were saying that she won the popular vote, but she lost to Donald in Rust Belt states. There's also disagreement regarding, I'm not sure if it's a male or female, about the homosexuality of Mayor Pete. And the argument is not that, it is that black people don't think he has done enough as mayor of South Bend. My response to that WhatsApper was, look at Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton was the governor of a town called Arkansas, which I'm seeing here online. Arkansas was, 55% white, 43% black. My question is, what exactly did Bill Clinton do that distinguished himself to the point among black people that he became identified as the first black president? And I remember that headline in, it was either People or the Time magazine, very well. Clearly, he impressed himself among the 43% of the population in that tiny city that he was governor of to demonstrate that people thought that he would make a good president. And you compare it with Mayor Pete, who was mayor of a similarly small town, city, which the population is 65% white. So the question is it that he didn't do enough for black people, or is it didn't he have opportunity? The number of black people in his city were 26%, compared to the number in Clinton's, that was 43%. So there was a greater, one could say, a greater harmony in Arkansas racially, a greater racial split, a greater diversity than there was in the place that Pete comes from. And I don't know that it is fair to compare the two and suggest that they had equal opportunities in the way that it is. And I go back to my point that I think the problem that he has among black people has a lot to do with his sexuality, which is not something that he can address. It's a conversation that we as black people have to have with ourselves. Donna Brastatz, good morning.
Morning, Peter.
Hey, morning. How are you going?
Not too bad. Now, you know, I am not going to be involved in any foreign politics.
That's a pity.
You know me from the beginning.
Well, you have the right to address whatsoever.
All you are doing is talking. Mm. You ain't gotten a vote. The others ain't gotten a vote. When they can't nothing in America.
You don't think that there's things that we can learn from the way that they manage their business?
Let me learn home. That one, first thing is learn at school to learn your table, even if you eat on it or not. No, Peter. Now, I heard you talking about the Democrats in America. Now, I want you to put your indicator to the Democrats in Barbados. It was only this week that I was reviewing domestic politics and the Democrats. And I want to deal with three personalities. Mm-hmm. Arlington DeCosta Edwards, Clyde Maskell, and Verla DeVito, who is president of the Democratic Labor Party.
Right.
And let me say this up front. It seems to me like Clyde Maskell is in the making with Verla DeVito. Now, let me go on to establish what I'm saying. Since I was close to Arlington DeCosta Edwards, and was close to a candidate who was running in St. Andrew for the nomination in St. Andrew, a man by the name of Dylan Hope. The older politicians would know both of them. Dylan told me, and Joy Harris told me the same thing, his intention came from Dark Hole. He would have had some DLP connections, because Dark Hole is in St. Joe as a young man. And he wanted to run for the Barbados Labor Party. This is Arlington DeCosta Edwards. But the older people in the Barbados Labor Party said he was too young and they would not trust him at this point in time. So James Struder, this is what Dylan told me, heard of the interest of Joy Edwards and went to Joy Edwards and said, I'm going to make you the candidate for the Democratic Labor Party. And went back and told Dylan, well, I'm asking you to step down from the nomination and allowed Joy Edwards to run. And that is history. He was the youngest minister, and he went on to be the youngest member of parliament at the time. Now, I say that to say this. This is 2 years the Democratic Labour Party is almost in opposition. To this day, the president
that they have. Not even she has not yet told the public, I didn't say people, where her interest lies.
She hasn't told people either, has she told people?
But that was the thing, I said she hasn't told people.
I've been asking people close to her what she's doing and they can't tell me.
Nobody so. Can't say.
So in even a secret, obviously it's not a decision that has been made.
No, so I am dealing with the Democratic Labour Party. I'm not dealing with Borrell any longer.
But sir, you know why I honestly push off of that issue. I don't know what more we can say to the Democratic Labour Party of Borrell de Pisa. They have a problem. That has gone long past since needing to be fixed. It is clear that the Democratic Labour Party has a determination that they will continue on the path that they have started. They went and scrape up Dennis Lowe and Jones, and they're going to scrape up just now probably a new leader from the old school, and they're going to go back to the same foolishness, and they're going to be dealt with effectively in 2023.
I cannot agree with you on that, Kong, because I have been witnessing politics in Barbados. And I have seen people that were dumped by the electorate and they went back for them. Just as a party. Parties were being dumped.
Have you ever seen a dumping on this level?
But I told you already I want to discuss that issue, but I don't want to discuss it. No. Let me say to you, let me deal with the issue I'm dealing with.
Have you ever seen the kind of defeat that you have seen, the kind of clear communication?
Not direct, because you have a different kettle of fish. Not direct, but 24-3 and 26-2 is serious dumping. Don't let me get away from that. Don't let me go at numbers, no.
Then a kinter horn, that is a...
Right, let me deal with the issue, because you can come up with what you want to come up with, but I deal with the general term that happening in the country at this point in time.
Mm.
Now, I made some research, and you know that if you go to school, as you always talk about foundation, there's a linkage between you and the fellow students at foundation, right or wrong?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Now, if a leader is associated in their workplace,
mm-hmm.
and the bosom of a Barbados Labour Party top-line person, her connection family rights is connected to that
mm-hmm.
BSB situation.
Right.
Let me remind you that there was a time that the Prime Minister's father resigned from Parliament,
right.
and went as Consul General to New York or
under the Dipper.
Right. And you know there was a selective, there was seeking a candidate to run in the city. And there was a lady who is the sister of Sir David. Her name came up to be a candidate. And Sir David made it quite clear, not in his mm-hmm. family. She could not be a DLP candidate.
Mm-hmm.
I am watching the connections mm-hmm. of brother BSB bosom.
But hearing that talk too. But we addressed that frontally.
I am saying, is it a possibility that if, since she has not notified anybody where she's running, that is a possibility that she could run a Christchurch for the Barbados Labour Party and know that do good may be leaving? Are you asking questions, you know?
You looking to push thought. I never heard that do good is leaving.
And certainly, but you didn't know where they left him before?
Well, I think I had heard rumors. But one could argue that I was less well connected then than I am now.
I am watching her movement.
I ain't watching that.
You have not
I thought you were talking about the St. Lucie thing.
I am saying that she has not declared to no one where she is going.
What you've raised is an interesting perspective. My inclination is that the environment that facilitated Clyde Maskell's jump from the Dems into the leadership of the Dems into the Bs is not a similar environment that exists now.
I would be hard pressed
to believe that there's any remote possibility that we're looking to end up in the bosom of the
Barbados Labour Party. But let me say this. Who tell you? I deal with possibilities.
Yeah, that's right.
You're a political analyst. I'm looking through the political eye.
Mm-hmm.
Who tell you now that if the next annual conference comes up and she would be as to get removed from presidency, that may not be the Labour to tell her that I am done with the Democratic Labour Party.
Right.
I am going to the Barbados Labour Party. Who tell you that is not an avenue that could possibly could take place?
But then we got to deal with how she would get to that first, because that's 2023. I think that she has a life beyond, and maybe she might ask those questions in 2023. But I would like to think that any time in the interim, that she would make constructive decisions in terms of her political future that would move her out of Christchurch, and you know where I would like her to see her.
But as I said, at the same time, you have DLP's supporters don't know what is happening with the organization.
The only person that seems to know is Straker Stanentry. He's the only person that seems to know what's going on and seems to be confident that what's going on is going in the right direction. But I mean, I talk to Dems every day and none of them ain't got a clue. Neither one of them ain't got a clue what really happening.
So that is all they have to say for the day.
All right.
Good.
Thanks a lot for calling, sir. We're going to take a break and come right back with some more discussion on this American situation.